All right, so today we're going deep on a case that should really make all you future lawyers out there think hard about how environmental problems can become constitutional ones too.
Yeah, this one's a real eye-opener.
We're talking Flint, Michigan. And, you know, the water crisis there, I mean, just imagine turning on your tap and instead of clean water, you get this murky brown stuff coming out.
It's straight out of a nightmare, really.
For the people in Flint, it wasn't a what if, it was their life for years. And that's where this case, Carthen v. Snyder, comes in.
Oh.
It's not just about the environmental disaster itself, but how the government, specifically officials, were held accountable for violating people's basic constitutional rights.
Exactly. And it uses this really powerful concept, the right to bodily integrity.
Right. And we don't see that invoked too often with environmental cases, which makes Carthen v. Snyder all the more significant. It sets a precedent.
Huge precedent.
So, for those of you who might not remember all the details, let's quickly recap the Flint water crisis itself. It happened back in 2014, 2015.
Yeah, when the city decided to switch its water source to the Flint River.
Thinking it would save them money, but the problem was, well, they messed up big time. The pipes carrying the water were old and corroded, and they didn't treat the water properly to prevent lead from leaching into it.
Corrosion control, they completely failed on that.
And it wasn't just lead. They had a major outbreak of Legionnaires' disease, and later on, it came out that officials knew about these problems.
And they tried to sweep it under the rug.
Exactly. They downplayed it, tried to hide the
It
evidence.
really makes you question their priorities, doesn't it?
It's a prime example of how decisions made by people in power can have these devastating, lasting consequences for ordinary people. So with Carthen v. Snyder, the legal battle really kicks off. You've got the plaintiffs on one side, the residents of Flint who had to live with this poisoned water.
Right. Their homes, their families, everyone was affected. It was a class action lawsuit, so it represented a huge number of people.
And on the other side, you have the defendants. And this is where it gets interesting because it's not just one person or entity.
It's a mix of government officials, state agencies.
Even private companies got pulled into this.
Yeah. You had Governor Rick Snyder right at the top, then the emergency managers who were appointed to oversee the city's finances.
They were the ones who pushed for the switch to the Flint River in the first place.
And then you have state agencies, though some of them were shielded from certain claims because of sovereign immunity.
Right, which basically means you can't sue the government without its permission in certain situations. So some agencies were harder to hold accountable directly.
But it didn't stop there. The lawsuit also went after private companies like Lockwood, Andrews and Newman, engineering firms that were hired to work on the water system.
And the argument there was that they were negligent. They should have known about the corrosion problem. They should have recommended treatments.
Their failure to do so directly contributed to the contamination.
Now, this being a big class action, it wasn't a straightforward path to trial. There were a lot of legal hurdles the plaintiffs had to jump over just to get their case heard.
Yeah, the defendants tried to get the case dismissed. That's pretty standard procedure. They argued that even if everything the plaintiff said was true, there was still no legal basis for the case to go forward.
But the judge wasn't having it. Several of the key claims survived those motions to dismiss.
Including the big one, the violation of substantive due process.
Right, which brings us back to that concept of bodily integrity.
It's basically the idea that you have a fundamental right to control your own body. What goes into it, what happens to it.
And the plaintiffs successfully argued that by knowingly exposing them to this dangerous water, the officials had violated that right. And to prove that, they had to show deliberate indifference.
Which is a pretty high legal bar to clear. It means that the officials knew about the risk of harm.
They understood the potential consequences of their actions.
And they still acted with a callous disregard for the safety and well-being of the people of Flint.
So what was it that convinced the court that deliberate indifference might have actually occurred?
Well, there was a lot of damning evidence, but one thing that really stood out were these internal memos.
Memos from within Governor Snyder's administration.
Yes, dating back to March 2014, before the whole thing really blew up, they explicitly warned that switching to the Flint River without proper treatment could be a disaster.
And they went ahead with it anyway.
And then, when the problems started to surface, they actively tried to downplay them, even as evidence of the lead contamination was mounting. They repeatedly assured residents that the water was safe to drink, even though they knew it wasn't.
All of that taken together painted a pretty clear picture of deliberate indifference. But there was another important legal concept at play here, something called the state-created danger doctrine.
Right, and this is a bit nuanced, so bear with me. The 14th Amendment usually prevents the government from harming you directly.
but it doesn't necessarily require them to protect you from harm caused by someone else.
Exactly, but the state-created danger doctrine is an exception. It says that if the government takes actions that directly create or worsen a dangerous situation, they can be held liable.
So in this case, it wasn't just that the officials failed to protect the residents from the lead, it was that their actions, switching to the Flint River without proper precautions and then covering it up, actually caused the danger in the first place.
And the court really drove that point home with a powerful statement. They said, "There's no difference between forced bodily invasion and misleading someone into consuming poison."
Chilling, isn't it? It basically equates what happened in Flint to a kind of assault, a violation of people's bodies without their consent.
And it goes to the heart of that bodily integrity argument. The residents weren't given a real choice, they were misled, and they suffered the consequences.
So, beyond these specific legal arguments, what else did the court find particularly significant in this case?
One thing they emphasized was the idea of conscience-shocking conduct. This means the officials' actions weren't just negligent or bad policy.
They were so egregious, so morally reprehensible, that they shocked the conscience of the court.
And that's a very high bar to clear in legal terms. It shows how seriously the court took the allegations against the officials.
They also drew a really interesting comparison to forced medical treatment.
Right. Just like you have the right to decide what medical procedures you undergo.
The court argued that you also have the right to decide what substances enter your body.
And the deception by the officials robbed the people of Flint of that right. They were essentially poisoned without their knowledge or consent.
And this brings us to the question of qualified immunity, which often protects government officials from lawsuits.
Yeah, the idea is that they shouldn't be held personally liable for decisions made in their official capacity unless they violated a clearly established law or right.
But the court denied qualified immunity for Governor Snyder and some of the other high-ranking officials.
They argued that the right to not be lied to by the government about public health risks was already well established back in 2014.
So they could be held personally accountable for their actions. Now, what about the engineering firms? How did they fare in the case?
Well, the court allowed the negligence claims against them to move forward. They found that those firms had a duty to provide competent advice and services, which included addressing the corrosion problem.
And the plaintiffs argued that they failed in that duty, which directly contributed to the harm suffered by the residents.
The court basically said, yeah, that's a plausible argument. Let's have a trial and see what the evidence shows.
So are there any other quotes from the court's opinion that you think really capture the gravity of this situation?
Oh, there are a few. One that stands out is, "Plaintiffs unknowingly drank and bathed in contaminated water, encroaching upon their right to bodily integrity."
It just highlights how insidious the whole thing was. They were exposed to this danger in their own homes, the place where they should feel the safest.
And the court went on to say, "The key is whether the intrusion is consensual. There is no difference between the first invasion of a person's body and misleading that person into consuming a substance involuntarily."
So powerful. It really underscored the violation of trust that occurred here.
Mm-hmm.
So, looking at the big picture, what do you think are the most significant takeaways from Carthen v. Snyder?
Well, first and foremost, it's a major win for environmental justice. It's not often that you see constitutional arguments succeed in environmental cases.
But this case shows that it's possible.
It opens the door for future lawsuits related to pollution and public health crises.
It could allow people to hold the government accountable when environmental harm translates into a violation of their fundamental rights.
And it also expands our understanding of Section 1983 of the Civil Rights Act. It shows that officials can be held liable not just for their direct actions, but also for their inaction or deliberate indifference.
It sets a precedent for holding them accountable when they create or worsen dangerous situations. Now, were there any practical outcomes besides the legal precedent?
Definitely. Carthen v. Snyder, along with other lawsuits, put a lot of pressure on the state of Michigan.
And eventually, they reached a massive settlement with the residents of Flint.
$626 million. That money went towards things like healthcare, education, and infrastructure improvements.
And beyond the settlement, the crisis forced some real changes in Flint. They replaced a lot of the lead pipes, implemented better water treatment systems.
Hopefully it also served as a wake-up call for other cities and states to pay closer attention to their own water infrastructure.
So ultimately, this case raises some really tough questions about the role of government and the balance between authority and individual rights.
Yeah, it makes you think, especially during times of crisis, when tough decisions have to be made about resources.
How far can the government go? At what point do their actions or inactions cross the line and violate people's basic rights?
It's a delicate balance, and Carthen v. Snyder shows us just how important it is to get that balance right.
To wrap things up, it's clear that the Flint water crisis was a multi-layered failure. It was a failure of infrastructure, a failure of governance, and as Carthen v. Snyder so clearly demonstrates, a failure to protect the Constitution.
It's a stark reminder that the 14th Amendment and the rights it guarantees apply to something as fundamental as access to safe drinking water.
Absolutely. And for all of you studying law, I think this case leaves us with some really important questions to ponder.
Yeah, like what happens when deliberate indifference leads to such widespread harm? Should officials face criminal charges in those situations?
And how do we distinguish between simple negligence and conduct that's so outrageous it shocks the conscience and violates constitutional rights?
And most importantly, what can we do? What systems can we put in place to prevent another Flint from happening?
These are big questions, and there are no easy answers. But by studying cases like Carthen v. Snyder, by understanding the legal and ethical implications, we can at least start to grapple with these issues.
And hopefully use that knowledge to build a more just and equitable future, one where everyone has access to the basic necessities of life, including clean water.
I think that's a great note to end on. This has been a really insightful deep dive into Carthen v. Snyder. It's a case that I think everyone, especially those of us in the legal profession, should know and understand.
It's a powerful reminder of the role law plays in protecting our most basic rights and holding those in power accountable when they fail to uphold those rights.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive.